Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. And thank you to our sponsor, Cytokinetics. Cytokinetics is dedicated to supporting the MDA community and to advancing potential medicines for families impacted by neuromuscular disease. We've got a great conversation for you today, all about siblings. Now let's get started. Having a sibling can be amazing. Siblings can be built-in playmates and best friends, your partner in crime, and a constant in an individual's life. Siblings represent deep roots and home for the entire life journey they embark on together. But sibling relationships are not without complications. And today we're talking to sibling pairs where one of the siblings has a neuromuscular condition and the other does not. We'll explore the dynamics and speak with the siblings in addition to our resident expert from the Sibling Support Project about considerations and strategies for navigating this relationship. I am so excited to have all of you with me today. How about we do a quick round of introductions? I was saying earlier before we got started, I've never had this big a panel on one of my podcasts before. So I'm really excited. Let's start with Abby and Ian, if you all want to introduce yourselves.
Hey, I'm Abby Yenzer. I am a physical therapist actually at the Muscular Dystrophy Association Clinic at Washington University in St. Louis.
And I'm her brother, Ian Yenzer. And I have Becker's muscular dystrophy.
Fantastic. Chris and Danny.
My name is Chris Carroll. I'm from East Norriton, Pennsylvania. I am a sales rep, and I am diagnosed with limb girdle muscular dystrophy type 2D.
Hello, everyone. I'm Chris's brother, Danny. I'm his older brother by 5 years, and I reside in Springfield, Pennsylvania.
Perfect. And now let's wrap up our introductions with Emily. Emily, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and about your organization and the services it provides?
Yes, thank you, Mindy. And so nice to be here with you, Christopher, Danny, Abby, and Ian. My name is Emily Hall, and I'm the director of the Sibling Support Project. We are an organization located just outside of Seattle, Washington, and we are dedicated to supporting brothers and sisters of people with special developmental health and mental health concerns. We do that work through books and publications, through online support communities for brothers and sisters, and through workshops for children, which are called Sib Shops. That's probably what we're best known for. I see some smiles, some recognition of Sib Shops, which is really nice. And it's really wonderful to be here today because I think having these conversations, talking with siblings, both with and without different health concerns and disabilities, is so, so important, particularly to consider both perspectives of that really unique and wonderful relationship.
You're absolutely right. There are definitely, you know, two sides of the coin, and each have their own unique perspectives and lenses that they're looking through the relationship with. So excited to have all of you here. I love, you know, hearing about sibling relationships. I grew up with spinal muscular atrophy, and I have a sister who's unaffected by any neuromuscular condition. And so, you know, this is a topic near and dear to my heart as well. And my sister and I grew up very, very close. So Chris and Danny, let's start with you guys. Would you tell us a little bit about your relationship, maybe describe your relationship and what you each like best about each other?
One of the things that I've always thought was great about Christopher is his personality. I always noticed how easy it was for him to talk to people. Even like friends of mine, like we're 5 years older, and he'll be like, "Oh, I saw Chris the other day, man. What a great dude," and stuff like that. And that's always been in the back of my head. Like, with the muscular dystrophy, his personality was never affected. He was always the cool kid, you know? Everybody that I talked to, "Oh, Chris is such a cool kid," you know? And, you know, growing up with our family, we have five sisters and an older brother who also has muscular dystrophy. So with Chris, like, he was the second from the youngest out of eight. So he was just my little brother. So I always felt like, you know, I was his protector, so to say. Would you agree with that, Chris?
Absolutely. And I mean, in that dynamic, growing up as one of the two of the eight that had muscular dystrophy, Danny was always there to make it normal for me. I remember being diagnosed originally with Becker muscular dystrophy when I was 13 or so, officially, but I noticed it and my parents noticed it when I was in probably about fifth or sixth grade, which they started seeing me have the same movements of as my oldest brother, Richie. And eventually I got diagnosed with limb-girdle doing like genetic testing down the line. It wasn't until I was like 28 where I got an official diagnosis. But once I started to show symptoms, I noticed, not that we didn't do it before, but I noticed Danny would try and make it as normal as possible with me, meaning like, let's go throw the football around. We had a basketball court in our backyard, and like anytime I was out there playing, he made sure to come out and like just shoot around with me, like different stuff like that. That obviously, like, I had this physical disability, but like he was always there to make sure that I didn't let it kind of hold me back in any way when it came to, I don't want to say normal, but normal, you know, like acting as a normal 13, 14 year old kid. And it was just always good because I think Danny took, like he said, took me under his wing to try and protect me, to try and like get me out a bit of that shell.
That's awesome. Abby and Ian, what about you guys?
So we've got a little different story and background. So Becker is an X-linked diagnosis. So my uncle, my mom's brother, had Becker. So we kind of grew up very familiar with this world and I guess what being disabled or having, you know, limitations looked like. But I was not aware that Ian had this diagnosis very young. So we just were kids, you know, he played sports and.
Yeah, for the most part, you couldn't really notice unless I explained it that was going on. Of course, I noticed in grade school that I was slower or that I would walk a little different, run different. But I always knew having my uncle, we were around him all the time. We were helping him with little stuff throughout the day. And it was really normal.
Yeah. It was a big part of it.
And then my cousin as well, who's a couple of years younger than me, has Becker's as well. So it's been part of our family, going to the different events with MDA and all that. It's pretty normal.
Yeah. I don't know. Like growing up, just, I think it was maybe when you were in fifth grade that I started to know, like I was more aware of the differences and like my parents talked to us a little bit more about it. But as kids, we were just kids and I feel like we got in a lot of trouble. We were not like kind siblings to each other. We were, we were aggressive and ornery and stubborn and, you know, like I think we've gotten closer off and on throughout the years, definitely closer now as adults than we were as kids, but we had a lot of fun times, so a lot of silly times. But yeah, it was, you know, just a little different start to that relationship.
Yeah, well, I could tell in getting to know you the last couple of weeks working toward the podcast, I can tell that you guys have a very nice relationship. It's been fun to get to know you. So Let me ask you, Abby and Danny, how did it feel to have a sibling with a disability? What was that like growing up? Did you notice that they got treated differently by other people? Or, you know, what was it like for you?
Growing up early on, it wasn't different to me just because, you know, we had so much experience with it in the family. I just was like, this is part of life. And it wasn't until maybe high school, sometimes in grade school, where my friends or, you know, people would just ask. From my perspective, it wasn't ever like rude or anything like that. They would just be like, hey, is your brother okay? You know, like, did he hurt himself? I'm like, yeah, he's fine. He seems fine to me. I actually, a memory from high school was someone had a common feature in Becker muscular dystrophy is large calves. And I was walking down the hallway in high school and someone asked me, like, did your brother play soccer? And to me, that was, I don't want to say ridiculous, but I'm like, no, I'm like, sorry. Yes. No, he has a disease. Like, I had to like recollect myself because it really was just our life. I didn't think of it as anything different. And he was always we were both very independent.
Awesome. What about you for you guys, Danny?
For me, it was slightly different because I had Richie, who I think is close to 5 years older than me, and Christopher, who's 5 years younger than me. So growing as a young kid, I'm looking at my brother Richie and I don't think anything of, you know, as a young kid. And then when you come to the realization that something is wrong with him, and then you're old enough to get it explained to you that what he has is muscular dystrophy and this is, you know, he's walking different. You know, I'm starting to get into sports and this is looking up at Richie, who's 5 years older, and like, all right, well, he didn't play. He was on the football team, but really didn't play that much. And then I'm thinking to myself, am I going to be that same way? Like, am I not going to be able to play? And then when you the realization, I didn't have it and everything's fine with me. So I kind of took a different approach with Christopher to make him not feel, you know, how I was thinking Richie might have felt. So even with that, like, I guess personal standpoint from it, like, I think I put a lot of pressure on myself to like push my body to the limit, so to say, like in sports. Like, I never felt like I was satisfied with what I could do, knowing that Richie had what he has, Chris has what he has, and I'm like kind of in the middle, so to say. Like, almost like, why don't I have it if those two have it?
That's interesting. I kind of want to come back to that in just a minute, but let me circle back to Chris and Ian. You know, having a sibling who's unaffected, for me, there were feelings. There was, you know, a little bit of jealousy that I couldn't do some of what my sister could do and things like that. What was it like for you? Was Danny just your brother, Chris, or were there emotions and feelings around the disparity?
Were there emotions? Yes, but not towards just Danny. I had five sisters and one brother that didn't have it. Now, once I got older and I started really getting into like the MDA and everything like that, it made a lot more sense with limb girdle muscular dystrophy as to why me and Richie had it. It's a recessive and it was 25% chance and it was 25% of us got it. So that made a lot more sense down the line. But like when I was a child, like I thought, like, why did it skip six people and then come to me? It wasn't like directed towards Danny. It wasn't directed towards Terry, any of my other sisters or any. It was just like, why was it skipped so many times? Then me, and then I had a little sister as well who doesn't have it. But it wasn't like any, like, I don't want to say it was jealousy, because the fact that, like, I always looked at it as, if I didn't have muscular dystrophy, I might be better at basketball than Danny is. Like, that's like, and four of my five sisters were all like college track, like they all ran cross country, they all ran track. And like, I got into them, their sports. Like, I was a ball boy for Danny's football team. When my sisters had track meets, like, I always made sure, like, I enjoyed going to that kind of stuff. So like, that's why, like, looking back on it, there was never any like jealousy, because I think if there was jealousy towards it, like, I would resent them for being so good at certain things. Mm-hmm. The way I looked at it, I mean, and if I didn't have muscular dystrophy, I would be probably right there with them doing all this stuff. But it was just kind of like easier said than done sometimes. But yeah. I was like the hand I was dealt and just tried to make the most of it.
That's really nice. That's really, Ian, what about you?
So I definitely think I felt a little bit of probably jealousy. Not that I wanted what she was able to do, but I felt like just like walking around in high school in just in general, and the fatigue and like trying to stay upright and trying to walk as normal as possible took so much cerebral focus that I wasn't getting out the other parts, you know, that was taking up so much of my energy. So, and then seeing my sister, she was always been pretty successful at different extracurricular activities, but swimming was a big one for her. She was got pretty good at it, and I know she put a lot of effort into that. But what Christopher said is like, I'm putting in a lot of effort into it, and I believe if I didn't have the disease, like, man, I'd be able to give her a run for her money.
Right.
But in some of that, what I was talking about, jealousy is seeing that, is kind of wanting that recognition for myself, like something that shows for the work that I did, and like feeling that she or a lot of people didn't really know that it took that sort of internal effort.
That makes sense. So we've kind of touched on a few different themes here. And Emily, I want to bring you into the conversation. You know, we've heard a little bit about, you know, some jealousy, about some guilt. Could you talk to us a little bit from your perspective and the siblings that you've worked with over the years? What do you see as being sort of the main, more dominant issues that you tend to see between this kind of relationship?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's so insightful to hear both perspectives of the experience of growing up with a neuromuscular condition in the family from both the person who has it and the sibling of the person who has it. And I've heard a lot of themes that have come up that are really pretty common in terms of the sibling experience. So we work a lot with siblings of people, you know, who have physical conditions, maybe cognitive conditions. And one of the things that we often say is that the sibling experience really parallels the parent experience. And there's research, a lot of research that really documents that. And there's less research that confirms what we're hearing today, which is that siblings, both with and without the condition, also have similar experiences. And so first, I just want to talk about, Abby, you talked about this, and Danny, you talked about this as well, kind of, you know, your baseline. And I agree, whoever said, I don't want to use the word normal, Chris, I think it was you, someone once told me, you know, normal is a setting on a washing machine. That's pretty much it, which I really liked because I think it's true. Like, what is normal? But, you know, our brothers and sisters, and I am a sibling as well. I didn't mention that in my intro. I wish my brother was here right now because we're all together. It's making me miss him. But anyway, all we know in life is what we know, our experiences and our families. And so, like, our brothers and sisters are our normal. And so oftentimes siblings recognize that there's something different, not through their own observations, but by how other people treat their brothers and sisters or the comments and questions maybe that come their way. And Abby, it sounds like you got a fair number of those questions, but not asked as unkindly as can be sometimes by children, right? Kids can be pretty mean. Also, this idea of kind of putting the pieces together, Danny, you sort of talking about, you know, kind of observing, well, this is what's going on with my older brother, and this is what he's able to do and maybe not able to do as much. And, oh, now I have this younger brother and he has a similar condition. And will I have this? And sort of putting the pieces together, how is this going to impact me? Because a lot of times, you know, families aren't having those conversations. Parents are often hesitant to share that information with siblings and also the kid who's affected. Right. I've heard many people say, like, well, we didn't really talk about it, even though I knew there was something going on with me, but we didn't talk about it as a family. And I think parents do that for the best and most loving reasons. They don't want to worry or burden their children. but it also can create some questions and this feeling that this is a taboo topic that we can't talk about. And I'm going to have to kind of piece this together myself. And also, Danny, talking about the fact that you put a lot of pressure on yourself to really push yourself in sports because you were not affected by this condition, because your body would allow you to, because, you know, you had this gift of, you know, physical ability that you felt like you had to make the most of it. And that's really common among siblings, you know, that because I'm not affected, I'm going to push myself and be kind of the perfect kid, the overachiever, the kiddo who's going to sort of balance out the scales in the family and achieve enough for everyone, which is great because you have a lot of siblings are these like overachievers, and it has a cost because sometimes that pressure can be a lot and it's hard to release yourself of that pressure. So I think all of those are really, really common experiences. And I really think it's so important that we talk about jealousy. And from the perspective of both siblings, this is something that we do talk about with siblings a lot, sort of being jealous of the time and attention that the person with the illness or the condition receives from parents. Because the truth is, a lot of times there are needs that need to be taken care of, whether it's through hospital visits or therapies or doctor's visits. And a lot of siblings can kind of feel left out of that. And I also think it's so interesting to hear from the other perspective. Well, I was also jealous because you could do all these things that I couldn't do. And by the way, I love the healthy sibling competition with these pairs here. Like, by the way, if I didn't have this condition, I'm pretty sure I'd be just as good, if not better than you, right? So I love that kind of like that healthy sibling rivalry. And I think it's so important to recognize that, you know, jealousy really is kind of a two-way street. Like the grass is always greener.
Yeah, it's such good points that you make. And I'm thinking back to, you know, my own childhood. And I do want to talk for just a second about parents, because we may very well have a lot of parents listening. And I think that one of the things that my parents did really well was to encourage me to find things that were kind of in my wheelhouse. My sister was a dancer and did a few other things along the way. And I really enjoyed music and singing and all of that. And so that was something that I got really involved in because my parents really encouraged me to find those things that could fulfill and make me happy while my sister was off doing her thing. I want to throw this other question out there because it also ties in, Emily, to what you were saying. But I am curious to know, and whoever wants to catch this question, feel free. I'm curious to know how your parents did explain the condition to all of you, whether you were the affected person or an unaffected sibling. Was it something that your families talked about?
For myself, I watching my oldest brother, and it was kind of what we just talked about, watching him, I started to notice I was doing some of the same stuff. I noticed when I was running, like my shoulders were going up in the air. Like I was running a little differently. I was going up and down steps a little differently. Like Gain said earlier, I noticed I had large calf muscles. And like at the time, I'm like, all right, that's not a bad side effect, you know? Like, and it was more so like, I think at the time it was like unspoken. Like I think my parents knew, but it wasn't until like probably a few years later that I remember we were sitting there. I was in my kitchen and I remember going to the doctor and getting blood work. And then like a week or so later, my mom was like, that blood work came back. You have a high CPK level. And we think you probably have the same thing that my brother Richie has. And I remember thinking like, it was a relief where I was just like, okay, like this is it. And then, but I was also like, it must've been hard for my mom. Like I never thought of it that way until like later on, like maybe that's why they didn't say it right away. Like, I don't know, but it was more like, I was just like, okay, like I knew. And I was kind of like just trying to be strong about it. And I was like, all right, now let's, because still, I mean, there's no cure now, but at the time I was just like there's nothing we can do, like kind of make the most of this. So like, that's the basically how I found that. It was just a quick conversation in the kitchen, and that was kind of the end of it. And then I started going to children's hospitals.
If I can chime in real quick, there was never a time like when we were younger, before Chris was even around, when we started noticing Richie had it. It wasn't like my parents sat us all down at the table and gave us a breakdown of what Richie had. I think we all started, even at a young age, noticing something was different. And I think they pretty much just explained that it's muscular dystrophy. We think it's this. They, you know, they're telling us that, you know, it's this, but never, ever was it ever like treat Richie differently, or then Chris comes along or treat Chris differently. And I think that's pretty good for my parents from their standpoint, because I don't think, Chris, you can vouch for this too. It was never a special treatment for either one of them. And I think that's in a good way, so to say, because we never treated Richie or Chris differently. We obviously knew. We obviously knew you couldn't just run by them and, you know, throw a shoulder into them or anything like that. But like they were never treated like as the number one, like, oh, you know, pizza night, Richie and Chris get the pizza first, you guys all wait. It was never like that. So I think that.
And I would 100% agree with that. And like the only other thing, like speaking about like when my oldest brother was diagnosed, like he went through all that. He went through the muscle biopsies. He went through all the tests that they put him through down at the University of Penn. Like I didn't have to go through all that. Like once I started showing symptoms, it was kind of like, okay, like, yeah, Chris must have it as well. But like I said before, I mean, genetic testing wasn't a thing back then. It wasn't until, I guess, 15, 20 years later that I basically spit into a tube and I got diagnosed 2 weeks later. You know, like that wasn't available back then. So it's kind of just like, it looks like Becker. It might as well be Becker. And I think what Danny was saying, like, I never thought that like home was kind of like a safe place for me growing up, meaning that like I didn't have to, I would lie to people as to what was wrong with me. Unless they were like my closest friends, I would say like, oh, I twisted my, like I would make up stuff about why I was walking slow or why I couldn't do certain things in gym class, you know, like Ian was saying, like the cerebral part of it, trying to walk as normal, like walking with a strut. You know, like just to kind of hide the fact that something was wrong with me to keep like, that's a lot of work. And it was at home just being treated normal and being able to just act normal. It was just like, I mean, I got yelled at as much as everybody else. Even like Danny said, like I played basketball, didn't play much, but my parents were at the games, just like Danny, like they were at his games and he was starting it. Like, so it wasn't ever like anything like that, you know? So it was always kind of like equal across the board to all eight kids.
Awesome. Awesome. Abby, I want to ask you, my sister often pitched in when we were kids and helped me and would do things for me. Even, you know, after she and I had both moved out of our parents' house, she would come over sometimes and help me with different bits of care and that sort of thing. Was much of that expected of you as you were growing up? And if so, how did it feel to be both a kid and a caretaker?
Honestly, as a kid, I had a lot of responsibilities, but not with Ian, with my uncle. And so I just always assumed that that was going to be part of my life. And I will say that there are times that I, you know, weaker times in my mental health where I resented that. I'm like, that extra effort of doing something that no one else sees. You know, I wanted to just live life. And as we got older, I was like, but this is my family. And then I'm like, no, we thought about moving away. My husband and I were like, let's go to Scotland. That seems like fun. And we were both just like, no, we like our families too much. And I'm like, yeah, I want to be there and I want to help my family, because I mean, that's what we are. We're family. And we've had, honestly, I think we've had more fun together working on like physical therapy and stretching than we did playing as kids. And there are things that I've done working with Ian that I could not do with any other client, you know, to make sure that he's as comfortable as possible. Cause I know that this disease for him is hard. You know, it's painful, it's uncomfortable. And having that knowledge, like that's part of why I do what I do. Cause I want to be able to be there.
That's really great. Emily, I want to ask you a couple of questions, actually, because a few of the things that Abby just said kind of jogged this in my own mind. I'm curious about playing, and I'm curious, you know, when you've got two or more kids with different abilities, how do you work out and encourage siblings and help parents to understand, you know, appropriate play and how to get kids working together and playing together well?
It's a great question, Mindy. And we get this question a lot from parents. You know, I just want my kids to be able to play together. I just want them to find common ground. And so I think a lot of it really is sort of identifying those games or activities that kids can enjoy together. And also understanding that the siblings aren't going to be able to necessarily do everything together and everything the same way, which is why I love, Mindy, your own story about how your parents encouraged you to find your thing and how for you that was music and for your sister it was dance. And, you know, you each kind of had your separate identities and the things that made you happy. Abby, you kind of said the same thing, like, you know, Ian always has had his own friends and like he's done his own thing. And, you know, Danny saying, yeah, Chris was the cool kid, you know, he had his own thing going on. And so I think the more that we can encourage parents to really embrace that idea that every child is unique and help them find and nurture those things that they love to do and make them happy based on their skills and their abilities, and also finding those common grounds. And I don't, you know, honestly, I don't think that that's too different in general for any parent, right? You know, especially if you have kids of maybe different ages, for example. You know, at home we have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old, and it's really hard for us sometimes to find activities that they'll both enjoy because developmentally they're at different stages. For us, like, there's a lot of Uno that goes on in our house because, you know, it's a game that we found that they both can play and enjoy. So whatever that is. And I think that this points also to something that, Chris, you said that is so important when we talk about how to support siblings with and without disabilities and different conditions. You know, one thing that we hear a lot from siblings in particular who say, you know, we did pretty well in this department of not necessarily feeling resentful or jealous of each other. You know, there are a couple of great things that our parents did. And one is that they really did set equal expectations for both kids. And so, Chris, I love how you say, like, I got yelled at just as much as everyone else, right? Home was a safe space where you were just another kid, right? Where your physical condition did not define you and it did not define your relationships with people in the house. You know, you were just another kid. And so to have the same expectations of all children to the greatest extent possible, I think is really, really helpful. That's what we've heard for years for, you know, for both siblings, affected and not affected. And then the other thing, which speaks to the question you just asked, Mindy, is that if there is something that brings a family together, maybe it's music or sports or maybe it's church or, you know, religious community. But if there's, you know, if there's something that brings together the family outside of just the diagnosis, like outside of the disability, that enables everyone to participate fully and has nothing to do with the neuromuscular condition, in this case, that can be really, really helpful to bring a family together.
Absolutely. And yeah, I'm getting flooded with memories from when I was a kid. And I also loved, Chris, your comment about getting yelled at or scolded as much as anybody else. And I had chores, you know, I had to set the table and my sister had to empty the trash. And, you know, we all kind of had to pull our own weight and have equal responsibilities and things. So what was helpful to all of you in terms of resources and coping mechanisms as you grew up?
I guess, you know, I saw my parent or my mom and her brother and their other sister's relationship and really just tried to be better. And that's honestly one of my favorite things about Ian is he always tries to be better. Like he tries to be the best version of himself that he can be. We look to each other for support. You know, we have a very small, tight-knit family, and we've always been involved with the MDA. So really, it was just kind of those outlets. But I don't think I really had anything outside of that. But for all of our disagreements and arguments and fighting and bickering, we're a pretty close family. And I think that was, you know, the main support that we had.
Well, and I think too, you know, this is a very specific circumstance, but, you know, any family that you look at has their own set of circumstances and adversity and all of that. And I personally would say, you know, our family was very close to the Muscular Dystrophy Association, and they, of course, were a great resource and help to us. But other than that, we all just kind of did the best we could and worked it out. So what you're saying really, really resonates with me, Abby. Chris and Danny, was there anything for you guys, or do you have kind of the same answer?
From what I remember, there was nothing, like, it was normal. Like, Richie's the oldest. So obviously my parents' view on it would be a little different of how they would cope with it. But growing up, once you got to the realization you're at the age where you understood everything, it was normal. And then when Chris came, you know, and we realized Chris had it, it was normal to us. Like, we were used to it, you know. And then obviously when they're going through their changes, like, you could see Richie could walk, you know, in college, he, like Chris said, with the, you know, the type of walking, but he was still walking. And then gradually, you know, now he's in a wheelchair, and obviously Chris is in a wheelchair now too. Like, so coping with that, I think it was, I guess we did it in our own ways, so to say. Like, brothers and sisters, you know, we would probably talk to each other about it, but it was never like, you know, now he's in a wheelchair, what do we do now? I think I looked at them, and if Richie was upset about it or Chris was upset about it, maybe that would make me more upset about it. But the way they handled it was like, all right, now I got to deal with this. What do you think, Chris?
I would even go as far as saying, like, I didn't really cope with it. Growing up, I kind of, like, just ignored it. It got to the point where I was like, I'm not going to let muscular dystrophy rule my life or ruin my life. And I, like, got that into my brain so much that I just completely would, I don't have it. Like, that's how I looked at it. Like, and that's why I would hide it from people, unless, like my close knit group of grade school friends, like, they knew in high school, and like, people knew, but nobody knew really the extent of it. And like, all through college, like, I went to Penn State, like, all through college, like, I made do with it. And it wasn't until college that I got, like, a handicap placard, like, stuff like that. Like, it's like little small changes like that, that, like, if I had to, I would deal with it. But for the most part, I just ignored it as much as possible. If I was in a room of people and I couldn't get out of a chair or I couldn't get off the couch, I would wait for people to leave the room. And then I would get up when I was comfortable around people. Like, it's stuff like that, that, like, was that healthy? Absolutely not. Because, like, it put me into some, like, dark places mentally that I just, like, it just wasn't good for me. And it wasn't until, like Danny said, I'm in a wheelchair now. Like, I was walking up until I was 28. I was hit by a car, and I've been in a chair ever since. I wasn't able to get the strength back, but that decision was taken out of my hands. Richie had to make a decision to get into a power chair, to get into a manual chair. Like, I didn't have to do that. I got hit by a car, so I was in a wheelchair, and then the muscular dystrophy kept me off my feet. And it wasn't until then that I was like, okay, now I have an excuse to be in a wheelchair. Like, I got hit by, like, so it was another reason not to cope with it, because now I could just say to people, oh, why are you in a wheelchair? Oh, I got hit by a car, you know? And it wasn't until, like, I met my now wife at the time, where, like, my wife Joyce, she really started pushing me towards, like, getting involved. And it kind of just fell on my lap to be an ambassador for the MDA. And that's how I started. And that, since then, that is how I've been able to cope with everything. Since that's happened, I've been, like, kind of a completely different person. And it's more like embracing it and living with it rather than hiding from it. And that is how I technically coped with it growing up. But like Danny said, in our house, it was normal. So like I would deal with it like that on the outside world. But once I was in our house, like.
Is that wrong? Is it wrong that we treated it like it was the norm? Like,
I think it, like it helped me because like I would never shy away from asking people for help, you know, like in our house. You know, like outside I would, but like when we were home, like.
Yeah. It was never ignored that you guys had muscular dystrophy. It wasn't like that. We were like, all right, pretend it's not even like they're both fine. It was never like that. I think what I'm trying to say, and I think Chris will agree, like we treated it like the norm. They were normal to us. Like I didn't look at him differently. I knew something was wrong. I knew something was wrong with Richie and both Chris. They have two different personalities, both Richie and Christopher. So I could talk with Richie about one thing, Chris about another, and it wasn't about muscular dystrophy, you know? It was about, with Richie, it was when I was younger, it was about wrestling, like WWF. And now with Christopher, we would talk about sports constantly. And I guess I knew Chris had feelings like that he wasn't showing. And maybe now like that I'm older, I'm like, oh, you should have told me, like we could have talked. And now we probably would be able to talk. And maybe as youngsters, like when he was going through that, say he's at 16, I'm 21. That's not what you sit there and talk about. Like, oh, your emotions, so to say, you know. But would you, am I in the right there, Chris, or no?
Yeah, like, but like even growing up, like, yeah, I would, like I wear it like on my sleeve now, you know. But like growing up, like I wouldn't want to talk about that to anybody. Like, it's just like the way it was like that. That's just the way I approached it. Like, yeah, I have muscular dystrophy, but like, don't worry about it. Like if if I fell down out in public, my closest friends knew how to pick me up, you know, like they knew what they had to do to pick me up. And like, that was, I looked at that as being like, I was lucky for stuff like that. I was lucky to be able to go home and like, be treated normal. I don't know. It was just like a situation where like I thought I was better off just ignoring it at the time and like getting past it.
It sounds like it was for all of us, our disability was always present, but not primary, mm-hmm. you know? And like you're saying, it was our normal. And Emily, I think that you may have opened by saying, you know, our families are our first version of normal to us. It's what we grow up, you know, knowing and being comfortable with. So Emily, I would love for you just to take a second talking about these SIB shops and, you know, what sorts of activities and approaches you take with kids to help them work through these issues when they're young.
So SIB shops are workshops primarily for school age brothers and sisters of kids with a variety of abilities and disabilities. And they really provide a combination of information and peer support in a highly recreational setting. So SIB shops are first and foremost fun. They appeal to kids who like to play. So we really center around play. And we also provide opportunities for siblings to talk about what it's like to have a brother or sister who has some kind of disability. And I can't emphasize enough how important the peer support component is, because all of us who facilitate SIB shops, you know, we understand that we're not the experts in the room, that it's really the kids who are the experts of their own experience and the ability to talk each other through those sticky situations we sometimes find ourselves in. That's really best left to kids who are living it every day. So SIB shops are, you know, they might look a little bit different in different locations. There are over 550 SIB shops around the world, and they might meet on different days of the week for different lengths of time, but they always include those components of information, peer support, and a lot of fun.
That's fantastic. And Emily, I want to go back to the siblings in just a second and ask them some fun questions about their relationships. But do you have any sort of final thoughts or, you know, resources or anything that you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, first of all, I think it's so, as I said in the beginning, I think it's so helpful and insightful and enlightening even to hear these conversations. And I'm curious just to ask, if you all have had these conversations before, is this the first time you're talking as a sibling pair about the muscular dystrophy. Chris and Danny, is this the first time you've really talked about this in this kind of way with each other?
I'm just finding out now that he has muscular dystrophy.
Well, hopefully that's not the case.
He's all surprised. I think kind of like what I was talking about before, it was never like, Chris, did we ever have like a conversation other than like now that, you know, like you even said, you wear it on your sleeve now. You want to talk about it more now than you did growing up. But I'm sure we had conversations about muscular dystrophy.
Yeah, no, I don't think, like, yes, we've talked about it before, and, like, we've had conversations about it. Like, I've known how Danny's felt about it before, like, being the one brother who doesn't have it. Never in, like, a formal setting like this to the MDA world, but yes, we've talked about it.
Yeah, and how about you, Abby and Ian?
I don't think the two of us have just sat down and chatted about it before. Actually, it was
never. Anything like this.
So I came down. This is his little apartment in our parents' basement. And I came down and I was like, okay, here's the questions. And he's just like, oh God. Like, we have never breached these topics before. You know, we tried to keep everything light and fun and happy. And so it's a little different. I think it's good for us, honestly. But no, yeah. I mean, we knew about the disease, we knew about everything that was going on, but we're not a real big feelings family.
Yeah, and I think that's probably more common, Abby and Ian, your experience, maybe not necessarily sitting down and talking about it. And it totally depends on culture and family and, you know, how we communicate and what we talk about as the family. But it's clear in both of your cases that you have very close bonds with one another, and that sometimes it's even the unspoken things that make those bonds even stronger. And at the same time, you know, I think about you, Danny and Chris, and both of you kind of realizing during this conversation today, oh, maybe it would have helped to talk about it in a different way growing up. And so this is a very long way of answering your question, Mindy, to say that, you know, I think it's always helpful for families to encourage dialogue about the disability in a really open-ended way. Like, here's, you know, here's this thing, here's this situation, here's this reality that all of us are living with. And we all have kind of a different perspective on the situation. And what's it like for you? I mean, it may be just like an open-ended question like that. You know, what is it like for you? How, you know, what is important for me to understand? And these might not be the words you use. You know, they might not be the most natural. Like, let's sit down and talk about it. But I do encourage parents to communicate with their children and to encourage communication with their children, especially young children, so that they're, you know, if there are questions, they have reliable sources for information, and they're not just sort of left to their own devices to figure things out or wonder, you know, is this something that will happen to me too? Or to wonder, well, how can I help my sibling, whether you're the person with the disability or not, right?
That's a really good point. I love that. And I think that one of the things that my parents did, you know, I had a number of surgeries growing up, and one or two of them were relatively serious and had long recovery periods. And I think that what I've gleaned since those things happened, you know, years later, looking back, I think that those were probably scary situations for my sister. And I think that my parents did a good job of sort of explaining to her what was going to happen, what it was going to be like when I came home, and how I was going to be feeling, and you know, that I was going to get better. It was maybe going to take 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, but I was going to feel better, and things that she could do to help along the way that made her feel better also. You know, sometimes it can feel good to be able to do something to help, you know. So I think I want to go to all of our siblings here. And I just want to close it out by asking what you wish the world knew about your sibling.
I would say something to do with her career choice, what she made, you know, her life is something that directly helps me and people like me. And I think that would be something that I'm proud of her. It means a lot to me, you know, the fact that she went, you know, and devoted a lot of her life to these conditions is just
special.
Yeah, there you go. Special.
Yeah. Abby, what about you?
I think, you know, he mentioned it a little bit earlier too, but just how hard he works at everything that he does. And the fact that even the smallest things are so much harder for him, and yet he still gets up and does them, you know, like going out to eat with the family, you know, if he has to shower before that, that's an entire day's worth of energy, but he still shows up and hangs out with our entire small extended family for, you know, get togethers and is there and is cheerful and literally the star of the show. Our entire family loves this kid.
I can see why.
Got a little bit of bravado when he gets out there. He's a fun kid.
Aw, that's really nice. Chris, Danny, who wants to go first?
I'll go. I will say about Danny, I mean, number one, he's an amazing brother. Just growing up, like he said, like, if the way he approached muscular dystrophy is that he had to take me kind of under his wing and be my protector, he did an amazing job at it to make me try and feel. It's like, as we spoke about before, like parents trying to like get kids to like find their niche, find like mine was sports. I love sports and it was something that I really couldn't do. And Danny was there to kind of like be my partner with that, you know? And I would also say he's an amazing father to my two nephews. Being a father now, I have a 1-year-old and a baby on the way. Like I hope to have like as much focus on my kids as he does on his. And it's good to see like they're two awesome kids. And I think that's all because of him.
So one thing the world should know about Christopher is he's a neat freak. Everything's runs to vac. I think how many times you run the vacuum a day? Like 4 or 5 times?
Wow.
Nah, it's 3.
I sweep probably twice and run the vacuum once.
He's been like that since he was younger.
Especially working from home now. I have to clean up after 3 meals a day rather than one. But
I don't want to be a copycat, but I'm going to pretty much say the same thing about him is he's been a great brother and always will be a great brother. And I'm looking at him now and I see that he's, you know, a dad of a 1-year-old and one on the way and happily married. So I'm proud of him. I think he does great at work. And it seems like the people at work think he's great, which is awesome. And he, like, even with all the kids, like the new baby is going to be the 23rd grandchild for my parents. So that's 21 kids that he's been an uncle to before his babies have come along. And he's always been great with all his nieces and nephews. So he's become a great man, to be honest with you.
That's really nice. Well, I think you're all amazing. Can we just hang out all the time? This has been so much fun. I think that you're all fantastic. And I can't thank you enough for, I know that some of the topics are a little bit uncomfortable to talk about, especially with your sibling present, but I really appreciate all of you being willing to come and talk and share your stories for the sake of others who may be listening and needing some advice. So thank you all.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.